Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
In a week where we discovered the Big Bash first draft needs a complete rewrite before it's anywhere near fit for print, this is Can't Bowl, Can't Throw.
Who would have thought? Andre Russell's still available and we're at pick eight, the last pick in round one. And the Hobart Hurricanes, they would have been the team that would have had to have planned for the most what-if scenarios for round one. The pick is in, Mark Howard.
Well, this is interesting. Ricky, who are you selecting for the Canes?
We've gone for Shadab Khan.
You're here with Kat Jones and Dan Lipke, and that's just a little snippet of the excitement of the Big Bash draft. Were you excited about it all, Kat?
We were on the edges of our seat, weren't we?
Yeah, we forgot that it started, and then we caught up really quickly.
That's right, because the Renegades, our team, picked Liam Livingston.
As I predicted last week.
Yeah, it was a very good pick, excellent pick. And after that, I don't think anyone picked anyone that anyone thought they would pick.
Well, Hobart used their three picks, as we just heard, to choose three Pakistan players. We had Shadab Khan, Asif Ali and Fahim Ashraf. So I think they're now like the Hobart Lahore Canes.
Yes,
is that what they are?
Definitely. Yes, definitely. Very good idea.
And we did have the kind of strange side of all these big name players missing out, right? These platinum players.
Yeah, Cricket Australia claimed that they were platinum players, and that kind of elevated them, I guess, to some kind of incredibly expensive status in the draft that not every team could afford.
Not any team could afford, as it turned out. So the ones that missed out were Faf. Who you were asking should
be picked
last week.
Yeah. I wanted Faf to be picked. Anyway.
Kieran Pollard, Andre Russell, Dwayne Bravo and Jason Roy, they were all platinum and they were all left on the shelf, on the platinum shelf.
Yes, but they're left on the platinum shelf. They can go now play in whatever other T20 comp is going on at the same time.
Yes,
so I guess they will.
One of the many others. One thing's for sure, they'll be racing back to be part of the Big Bash draft next year, won't they?
Yeah. Yeah,
they would have loved to
the
have their
Big
names
Bash
up
snubbing.
There. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. And it wasn't a great TV, all of that, those administrators all sitting around the table. I mean, it's very similar to the IPL. These people that you barely can recognise, maybe in the odd ex-cricketer, whole lot of bunch of administrators in close-up for 90 seconds as the clock ticks down and we see the administrators congregating and talking and then they announce a player that no one's heard of.
Well, at least in the IPL you've got the kind of the thrill of an auction. It's a bit of back and forth. You're saying, I'm bidding this, then someone else has got to bid something. This is just like, oh, we'll take him.
Yeah.
And then I was like, who? And it's like, him. Never heard of him.
I felt very sorry for the MCs. Having to go, great, I didn't research that dude, Josh Cobb. Good, tell me about him.
This is the part of the show where we discuss the cricket news of the week.
Well, there actually is a lot of stuff going on in the world of cricket this week, but we have just time to cover the top secret ODI series. We talked about it last week. We've talked about it twice in a row.
It's dangerous.
This was the series between Australia and Zimbabwe in Australia.
I know, yep. Yeah, they tried to keep it secret, but we managed to track it down. There was a little bit of publicity before the ODI. Maxwell came out and had a few things to say in a newspaper interview, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, he did. He was very frank and talking about how most of these people are his friends.
Yep.
You get the impression everyone's Maxwell's friend.
Yeah,
he's a very friendly guy.
Yeah.
And what did he say? He said it's weird how if you're normal to people, you actually make friends with them. Looking back to my first couple of years, there was still a bit of, we're not friends with them during the series.
Yeah, I think he quite likes this new Pat Cummins, Andrew McDonald era where apparently you're allowed to be friends with players even while you're playing against them.
Yes, well, it's remarkable, isn't it, that you can actually play...
Not be dicks the entire time.
Yeah, like they do in state cricket all year round.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. Yes.
Another way of welcoming Zimbabwe back to Australia was Foxtel, who decided they would show highlights of Matthew Hayden hitting 380 against them in a test back in 2003.
Do you reckon they were watching that in their hotel room going, so. Oh, shit.
I remember why we didn't come back here now.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit rude of Foxtel, I think.
Yeah.
But it was nice to see Australia playing an ODI on a Sunday. That was like the perfect Sunday. Get up.
It was incredible.
Great time zone. It's like started at 9:30. You could have a little bit of a sleep in.
Mm.
Chill out. Turn it on. Dip in and out of it. It was fantastic.
Yep. Watching cricket all day in the middle of winter.
Mm.
In Australia, that is.
Yeah. Well, the end of winter. So it's the last bits of winter,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's true. It is at the end of winter.
Yeah. Zimbabwe was certainly very leisurely about it. They just strolled along. They batted first and they were, yeah, content with 4 runs and over for most of their innings and therefore ended on 200. So they're very mathematically correct there.
It was perfect.
Zimbabwe, yes.
Absolutely perfect. And then, you know, Australia didn't destroy them.
No.
We were very nervous when we found out that Zimbabwe were batting first.
Yep.
However, they gave us lots of entertainment in 200 runs.
Yep. So Australia spiced it up a bit. We had some terrible reviewing from Cameron Green or from Aaron Finch, I think, on behalf of Cameron Green.
Yeah.
So Cameron Green, true to his name, had an LBW reviewed that ended up having not one but 2 green lights,
yes,
which is pretty rare, really.
Yeah, not the best review.
We also had Steve Smith being having some fresh areas of weirdness. A few people noticed this one. That
yeah, he was very formal, wasn't he? Whenever anyone got a wicket, he'd come up to them and put his suit and tie back on and give them a bit of a handshake.
A formal handshake. Yeah. Says, well done, sir. I applaud that effort, yes.
He was very funny.
Yes. And of course, when the run chase came around, Finch was out straight away, as you'd expect. But Warner was the highlight of the run chase because at one point Warner edged a delivery behind and stood his ground, and then Zimbabwe knew he'd edged it and they made the big T sign, and Warner also knew he'd edge it, so he just said, oh, can't be bothered waiting for the review, so he started wandering off. And then as he got close to the edge of the boundary, he looked up at the big replay and thought, it's not much of a spike on that sticker. So he stuck around a bit longer, and eventually the third umpire had no choice. The third umpire said, well, I can't, even though he knows he's out, everyone knows he's out, there's no actual evidence that he's out. So
are we sure it was Snicko? Because, you know, when you get something like that and there's no audio, it's probably a Zoom call.
Could be a Zoom call, yes. Yes. Anyway, so that was very funny. I did enjoy David Warner walking off because he knew he hit it, then walking back on because the technology didn't show it.
Yes.
And then we wrapped up the match with a little bit of Maxwell Ball.
That was wonderful.
Well, so Steve Smith was just, you know, fart-assing about at one end.
He was giving us entertainment, wasn't he? He was going, I want you to get as much cricket as possible on this Sunday. I'm just going to slowly nurdle the ball around.
Yeah, the required run rate when Maxwell came in, I think, was 0.69 runs per over. And I think that's what Steve Smith was aiming for. I will score 0.69 runs per over, win this off the final ball.
Yeah.
Maxwell wasn't having any of it, though. He hit 32 off 9 balls and he was out of there. He'd had enough.
6-4, 6-6.
Yeah, Hayden-esque stuff there from Glenn
Maxwell.
It was
a perfect ODI, though, wasn't
it? It was,
And there's more to come.
Please support capitalism by checking out these sponsors.
And so speaking of Maxwell Ball, this episode is sponsored by a text adventure game that I've created called Maxwell Ball, which of course for legal reasons is nothing to do with Glenn Maxwell himself. It's just a general Maxwellian figure.
That's right. Yes. It's a generic term, Maxwell Ball.
It is, yes. So it's actually 2.5 text adventure games. In the first one, you find your way into the Australian dressing room, or you're trying to anyway. You've got to deal with autograph hunting kids and ticket sellers who aren't very helpful and spooky scalpers.
Mm.
And then in the second game, you're in the dressing room, ideally, because you've got past the first one, and that's where you've got to deal with your captain and your coach and your teammates who are a bit problematic. And you know, there's also an alternate dimension in there at one point, so that's very Maxwellian.
Yes, indeed.
And then in the final kind of half mini game, you actually get to the middle of the MCG and you have to face up to your first delivery. And you can play all of them for free by going to maxwellball.net.
And is that's a text adventure game. Tell us, remind me, what do you have to do in a text
adventure game? So a text adventure game is basically like a written book, and it says you are in the MCG car park, what do you want to do? And you type in, go north. And it says, you can't go north because there's someone blocking you, and you find objects and you have to solve puzzles and it's all kinds of fun there.
It is. It's much more fun than a visual video game, right?
Yeah, can't be bothered doing graphics. So, yes. Yeah. Maxwellball.net.
When's the short ball coming?
Short ball obviously plays a huge part.
Get yourself to play the short ball. The worst thing to do,
play the short ball.
Or you're playing the short ball.
Yeah, we're going to talk about playing the short ball.
So this is the short ball segment. This is where we focus on one specific delivery of a particular cricket match. And what ramifications it might have for just the entire concept of cricket as a whole.
Yes, indeed. And this one specific ball that we're going to focus on was in a match between England and South Africa. Mm-hmm. And this has been a wonderful series as well. It's going on over in England at the moment. Beautiful time zone for us to watch it on our TV screens. Yep. And we've been doing a bit of commentary. Mm. It's been absolutely glorious.
Yep.
And, of course, this short ball features Stuart Broad.
As all the best short balls do.
Yeah.
So this is, in particular, it's Stuart Broad taking the wicket of Aidan Markram, who has caught it slip by Zach Crawley. So this is after South Africa started their second innings 264 runs behind after collapsing for 151 all out on the first day. And in the second innings, Markram's wicket meant that they were 3 for 54, and they went on to be bowled out for 179, losing by an innings and 85 runs. So basically reversing the first test result. So this particular ball that we're talking about, as we mentioned, Crawley had Markram caught it slip, but a little bit earlier, Broad had already got Markram out, right?
Mm, that's right. Broad bowled Markram and then they were so busy celebrating and the umpire calls no ball.
Yes, yes. They checked it upstairs. And
a classic no ball wicket.
A classic of the genre. England do love a good wicket off a no ball. I think there's about four or five England bowlers whose first wickets have been taken away because of no balls.
It's so a rite of passage. Everyone needs to do it from time to time. In fact, you know, it's quite it's tolerated, right?
It's to be expected. And it felt a little bit too easy. I actually tweeted at the time, this seems too easy piece of comedy for Stuart Broad. I mean, it's very good for your average run-of-the-mill cricketer, but Stuart Broad, you expect a little bit more from him.
That's right. We've seen this bit of comedy before.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Monty Python telling a knock-knock joke or something. It's just a little bit too easy. And, of course, the no ball itself was marginal, so we had a little bit of Stuart Broad arguing with the umpire saying, come on, it was that far over, not barely. So he complained to the umpire, probably thought about reviewing it knowing Stuart, but I don't think he could get Stokes to go along with the idea of reviewing the no ball.
Yes, indeed. So then, of course, next wicket he got, fresh in his mind, he remembered this and he didn't really celebrate the wicket. He appealed, but he didn't really celebrate. So that was funny because we're very used to Stuart Broad celebrating.
Yeah, right? Stuart Broad will celebrate when it's not out. Like he'll celebrate any ball that happens to hit the pads. He'll celebrate appeal and charge down. And this time, he restrained himself and instead he went completely the other way, right? He just flipped straight around and stared at umpire Chris Gaffney.
Yep. He was waiting and waiting for the third umpire to check the front foot.
Yep. And Chris Gaffney played along. See, that's the great thing about Stuart Broad. Stuart Broad lifts everybody comedically, right?
All right. He lobbed the joke up and Gaffney came right on in and thumbs upped the response there so that Stuart Broad would know, no, it's okay, legal delivery, give you the thumbs up.
Yeah, so that was very entertaining, very funny stuff, magnificent comedy all around. I think replacing the celebrity appeal with a stare at the umpire until he gives you a thumbs up that the delivery was legal, I think that's just impossibly good stuff.
Absolutely incredible. And it was also a very good performance from England, right, to come back and win that test. It was a great performance from South Africa in the previous one.
Yeah. In this one, like the highlights were, as you say, were all England. So Ollie Robinson, for example, he didn't get injured at any point. So it's very good.
Very good stuff.
We also had Zach Crawley making 38, which is...
Did he really? I have no memory of that.
He made 38 in England's only innings, which is precisely the right kind of score for Zach Crawley to make, right?
It's not good. It's not bad.
Yeah, it's just enough to get everybody, all right, we'll maintain the status quo. If you think he should be there, he's still there.
If you think he should be dropped,
he should probably still be dropped.
Yep.
Perfect score from Zach Crawley.
Yeah, that's good stuff too. Yep, definitely.
We also have Ben Foulkes and Ben Stokes, who both scored centuries in, you know, a kind of partnership that sounded like something a child had made up.
Foulkesy and Stokesy off on adventures through the moors or something in the English countryside. Presumably they're either talking bunnies or talking foxes or something like that. Stokesy and Foulkesy,
yep. And the other thing that I quite liked was people talking about the Jimmy Anderson end at the ground. they never shut up about the Jimmy Anderson end, particularly when Jimmy Anderson is bowling from the Jimmy Anderson end.
Is he allowed to bowl from the other end?
I don't think he is, no. I think he is has to bowl from his own end.
Oh, that was fantastic. And you have a theory about the Jimmy Anderson end.
Yeah, well, I think if I was playing on, you know, on the ground against him, I'd just keep pointing at the sign and saying, is this the end of Jimmy Anderson? And I'd keep saying it over and over. Is this the end of Jimmy Anderson? Until
everybody got annoyed at me. Ideally, Jimmy Anderson himself and threatened to thump me or something.
Yes. Well, he's supposed to have a little bit of a temper on him. So yeah. Probably not the kind of guy you want to be teasing about.
Is this
that.
The end of Jimmy Anderson?
I don't think that would get tired at all.
No, yeah. Of course not.
I there was only really one negative for England, I think, in this one. They didn't get to do a classic baseball fourth innings run chase,
no,
did they?
No, not at all.
Very disappointing. But I think, you know, if baseball was anything, you know, Stokes should have asked or demanded that they come out and chase a negative target in the fourth innings.
Why not?
That would have been impressive.
I can't bowl, can't throw, coming live. Thanks for tuning in and taking your time. The underappreciated act of the week. The funniest and crazy plays of the week. Who is going to join the honorary board? The number one Scott Moeller reward.
This is the Moeller Award. This is for underappreciated acts in cricket. And we only have three nominations, so it's possible the intro will last longer than our chat about the nominees. But this is, of course, in memory of the wonderful Scott Moeller, who couldn't bowl or throw.
Yep, according to a cameraman and or leg spinner.
Well, that's right. I mean, the leg spinner did say later.
That is true, yes. But not at the time, apparently.
He was probably right. They said he couldn't bowl or throw. They were probably right.
Yep. So what's the first nomination we got here, Kat?
The first nomination is a wonderful hat trick for a teenager from the US.
Yep.
And her name was Geetika Kodali, and she was bowling and...
She was bowling in the 660, right?
The 660, that's right. The 660, which we love, the 660. And she bowled a hat trick from two balls.
Yeah.
Tell me how she did this, Dan.
Well, this is very clever. Like when we first saw it, we saw a hat trick from two balls. Is that a typo? Is that was that a double play? Do they have these fancy new rules in there? But then it was
could have been anything in the 660.
Yeah, could have. Yeah, I mean, they do have a lot of rules. Like, did people vote for an extra wicket? Could have been anything.
That's right.
But as it turned out, it was like legitimate cricket rules that allowed her to do this. So as soon as we realised that, then we were able to puzzle it out. And it turned out she had the first wicket caught at point. Then she got a wicket bowled the next ball. And then the third one, this is the one that allowed her to get three wickets off two balls. She had the batter stumped off a wide, which
glorious.
Is fantastic. Imagine bowling a wide for your hat-trick ball and then getting a stumping. That's just the best thing ever, I think.
I think more bowlers on a hat-trick should try this because I don't think the batters are expecting it, right?
Definitely not. Why was the batter out of their crease? Why are you going anywhere off a hat-trick
ball? Why are you trying to sweep this hat-trick over the boundary?
I think that's very good. I'd like to see someone go for a hat-trick off zero balls next. I mean, that's the goal.
Yeah,
but I do think we should call a hat-trick off two balls. That should be called a double hat-trick, right?
That's a perfect definition of a double hat-trick.
Yeah, so I think that's what we're calling it now, just to add extra confusion to the mix.
Yeah, definitely. So we had another nomination here, which was Billy Pratt on Twitter pointed out there's somehow a correlation between the Large Hadron Collider at CERN being turned on and Johnny Bairstow's test batting average.
Yeah, so Billy Pratt put out a nice little graph which did show that
when the collider
goes on, then Bairstow's average goes up, and when it gets turned off, it goes back down again. My only real comment on this one is surely given that we've discovered this correlation, it should be called the Large Hadron Collider.
Yeah, it should be. Yep, definitely. Yep. Oh, that's good.
All right, I've got one final nomination. This goes to the Welsh Fire Men. So we didn't really get a chance to cover the 100 this week.
It is still going on, but...
Barely.
Yeah.
Yes. And the Welsh Firemen, they finished with 0 wins in the 100. Out of 100 for the Welsh Firemen.
Poor old Welsh Fire. Who plays for the Welsh Fire? Adam Zampa, right?
Not at the moment. He's back in Australia, so it probably hasn't helped them.
No. Well, he just went, oi, if you can't win one, I'm going back to Australia.
Yep. Yeah.
Presumably, the Welsh Fire will get the first draft pick next season and the opportunity to ignore Faf, Kieran Pollard, Andre Russell, Dwayne Bravo and Jason Roy.
Yeah, I imagine so, yes.
Yeah.
My theory is that they're never going to get the W back into the ECB acronym if they can't muster a single one of them.
No.
So, poor stuff there from the Welsh Fire.
Anyway, I have checked out the Welsh Fire women who managed to win one out of their six.
Oh, yeah. So, infinitely better than the men.
Yeah.
Yeah, good work from the Welsh Fire women. So who wins the Muller this week? Is it the Welsh Fire? Is it Billy Pratt on Twitter, or probably Johnny Bairstow's large hadron collider?
No, it's Geetika Kadali.
Yeah, it's Geetika Kadali, yes, with a two-ball hat-trick. Well done.
Yeah.
With a double hat-trick. And that probably brings us to the end, right?
Yes, you've been listening to Dan Liebke at Lieb Cricket and Kat Jones at Cricket Bat Kat. And we would love you to come and find us on social media and follow us and make a comment and tell us what you would like us to put on our next podcast.
Yep. And we will see you next week. Is this the end of Jimmy Anderson? Sports Social Podcast Network.